This is tape one, side B, and we're just continuing to talk about various aspects of life here in America. What we were speaking about earlier was how the government had kind of usurped the role of the church, and you were saying that you didn't feel like the Armenian church perhaps lived up to its potential in the way it could have served the community. Is that accurate?
Right.
Well, aside from programs and food pantries and financial assistance, which are part of the church's existence, I'm interested in how you came into a relationship or how you were able to form the first thought in your mind that God is. Because that is so foreign to many people in this culture today. And I feel like if you believe that the Lord is, then there was a first time that it struck you. And maybe you can't remember it exactly, but tell me about your first impressions about who you are, why you're here. You know, those eternal questions that all of us ask. When did it first occur to you that you were part of something much bigger than Ed Asadorian?
Well, serving in the church the first 18-20 years, after the church was bought, and the work we put into renovating it and everything else.
Down on Maple Street.
Yeah, Maple Street. And the feeling you get when you go to church.
You served as what capacity there? Were you a deacon?
No. I was treasurer on the Board of Trustees.
On Board of Trustees.
Yeah, I was treasurer, I guess, for the first 11 or 12 years. Me begin to find out that the amount of money that's coming in is just not adequate to maintain the church. You had to always look for interest outside, get help from the outside in order to help financially. Yes, you seem like without a church, there was something lacking.
For you and also for the entire community.
The family.
The whole
community.
And it was like a family.
Oh yeah.
What were some of your relationships like then? Even it doesn't have to be in the church, but people that you hung around with.
I liked it.
And on Sundays it was all day together, huh?
And it spanned out even during the weekdays.
Yeah.
The older generation were the ones that really were close to the church. As a result of that, we were drawn into the church.
You consider yourself second generation?
Yeah, right. Because we had, when I was 18, 20, 22 years of age, 28 years of age, we had older people that were the ones that thought of the church, the community not having a church. And they formed an organization to turn around and collect some money, and then when the church was available, they purchased a church. I remember one time at one of the board meetings, I think our monthly payment was something like $63 a month to buy the church. And many of the older senior citizens had difficulty during the Depression to even maintain their home, some on the verge of losing it. And they wanted to pay that church off real quick. And we looked at it this way, it's only $63, you know, we could pay that. But they wanted to pay it off right away. Anyway, they bought the church in 53, and then we updated it, and it was ordained, I think, December the 2nd or December the 5th, 1945.
54.
54.
Do you remember what priest? Who was your first priest?
He was a visiting priest.
He was a visiting priest. We didn't have a priest per se. And then we got an old man by the name of Dr. Gaspar, and he was our first permanent priest.
He lived with us.
And
lived in your house.
Yeah. And we tried to call people and say, who's going to house him? You know, nobody wanted to house the guy. So I called my mother and told him, I said, prepare a room for a priest where you stay at our house. Because she didn't appreciate it at the time.
But we ended up having a nice time with him.
And he wasn't there a year, was he? Ten months. And then they decided that he should be close to the church, so, and we lived downtown. So they moved him to one of the board members. Anyway, so he was there, for, I guess, for about 2 years. No, more than that.
More than that.
59 is when Gregorian came in.
Mm-hmm. 4 years?
He was there for 4 years.
Matter of fact.
And that offered problems too, because we knew nothing about the church per se. And then he would do certain things, and we'd say, well, why are we doing it this way? He'd say, well, this is the Armenian rule. Okay, so if you were doing it that way. So 3 months later, we had the same situation where he would do it a different way. And I'd say, why are we doing it that way? It's Armenian rule. You can't have a situation that you do it one way 3 months ago, now you're doing it another way, and tell me it's the same rule, you know.
Well, with him, Eddie, he was semi-retired.
Well, I know.
And they sent him from California to us. And he was with us. Matter of fact, he was there 2 weeks when Aunt Melanie was born, our daughter. And for 10 months, that was her grandfather. You know, he would take her out of the crib and carry her and love, because he had 5 children, I don't know how many grandchildren, living out in the East Coast. And he missed them. So he turned all his love over to her. And I'll never forget during service one day, I was carrying her and she got tired. I put her down and she yelled, she couldn't say dead height. She yelled, dee da dee, and down the aisle she went. And her godmother just grabbed her like this by the dress and caught her as he turned around to bless the congregation. And he saw that. And you could see him trying to keep from laughing. Afterwards, he came and grabbed her and carried her, and he said, you spoiled Didadi today, you know. And she was, what, 10 when he died? No, younger than that, when we got word that he had died. Or was she older than that?
Oh, older than that.
Yeah, because she cried. She remembered him,
yeah,
you know.
Strong bond.
Uh-huh. And then one time we had visiting clergy. What was his name, honey? This last one we had, the visiting clergy that I didn't want, and I left and went to visit my sister. Left you and your sister with him. Yerisha? What was his name?
Arsha. Oh, yeah.
And I said, I've had it with all the clergies coming. I'm tired of breaking in new clergy, so I took off and went to visit my sister. And came back, and I asked my sister on our roads, God rest her soul, I said, well, how'd the weekend go? And she said, oh, Mary, he wasn't that bad. Next thing you know, next weekend, he comes, he's staying with us again. And after that, he came every other weekend, and he wouldn't go anywhere else but here. And finally, I fell in love with the man, you know. He became the father of this home. And I said to him one time, I said, well, you gonna go to someone else's home? He said, not coming here. Yeah, I mean, I got to the point that I always teased our clergy. Now, this is our time, you've met him.
Yes.
Okay, we met him before he became a priest, all right? Our son Arthur picked him up at the airport.
You're talking 92?
Yeah. And I'm in house dress cleaning when the front door opens and my son yells, oh, I got company, Mom. I said, fine, bring him in. Come to find out, it's Martin, whose name at the time was Mashkat, okay, Mark. and his wife was Pauline. And I said, oh, yeah, you're the new priest, or going to be the new priest. He said, I said, well, I'm telling you right now, I'm answering the door, but don't expect me to answer it again. I don't have time to answer doors. You open the door, you yell Mary. If Mary answers, you come in. If she doesn't, close the door and leave. And he had never forgotten that. So he does. He opens the door, he walks in. Mary, yeah, come on in, you know. But we have been very, very close with every one of our clergy. We have.
Right.
And he has done a lot of work for a lot of them. But not with Vartan, have you?
No.
Because he does it all on his own.
Whereas with the others, we put out a monthly bulletin. We put one out now, but I think it's every 3 months or something like that. We used to put one out every month. And we'd sit down and we'd translate from the Armenian to the English. And then it would be typed up, we'd run them off of stencils and everything else, and then put the package together. And I guess when the paper first started out, I guess in 63,
mm-hmm.
I spent the last 2 weeks in church, working on a church bulletin. And Art B, and I, if you're going to interview him or not.
Yeah.
I'm going to interview Arthur,
Sunday.
Mr. Beedian, Sunday at 12:30.
And he was on the group to put the church bulletin together. And he came all the way from St. Louis. Well, you had typists sit down there and type these stencils. And you're not paying him anything, so you can't say, hey, I want you to come in at 7 o'clock. I don't want you, no talking, nothing. Type the bulletins out, let's get them all out so we can get out of here. Well, they sit there and they talk, and this way Art would get pretty perturbed because he came all the way from St. Louis. He wants to get the thing done and get back home. But anyway, we used to work that. Perry Manoogian used to run the papers, collate them, and we turn around and send them out every month. This was every month. I got how many times I got told, well, to get a cot and just live in the church basement, that's where you belong.
Spent a lot of hours, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what's the scripture? There's a man who enlarged his storehouses and barns. He was so prosperous, and one day the Lord told him, this very night I require of you your soul. And I think it was Jesus who said, store up your treasures in heaven where it will not rust and where moths don't get to it. So maybe that's what you were doing. Serving the Lord.
Not because he's my husband, but he is a good-hearted man. And he walks in that church and he is lost. Because he sits here on this side, I'm back here. I could see what goes on. He is completely gone. And I keep saying, Eddie, it's time for a collection. Eddie, you got your money ready? To myself, hoping he could, mental telepathy, you know. But he's the one that goes up and kisses the book. He's the one that passes the peace sign. And if he's not there, Art Beedian will do it. If Art's not there, I don't know who does it, because I'm not there. And but nobody takes that job away from him. And it should be a board of trustee member that does it. And neither one of them are on the board now. But they do it because they know the what things to do. Our young kids of today don't know it.
The young kids even in the church.
Yeah.
Well, they got little girls down the coast, pass the collection plate around.
Yeah.
And once or twice a year, they'll have the young kids do that. Except to kiss a piece and go up and kiss the Bible. And I forget sometimes, and I get involved with trying to compete with the children.
Well, what has the Bible meant to you throughout the years? Because we thought of our town, and I talked about how St. Mesereau translated the Bible and the reasons why he translated the Bible and how important that was to the Armenian people at the time to have the scripture in their own language. And perhaps that's something else that I'm guilty of taking for granted, that here we have so many Bibles. Everywhere you look, there's Holy Scripture. Mm-hmm. And I read about churches in China where they memorize one page out in the woods for fear of their life, you know, where Scripture is just so precious to these Christians. And I was interested in just how the Lord's Word has impacted your life.
Well, I'm ashamed to say I got a Bible, but I don't read the Bible much.
Mm-hmm.
What Bible reading I'm exposed to is normally on Sundays when we go to church.
Or something from the new, something from the old.
Yeah. He gives good lectures and he gives points across.
Yeah.
Now you got to remember, our whole service was done in Armenian until recently.
Till Father Vartan.
Yeah.
Right.
Till Father Vartan. And he's gotten permission to use, because we do have a lot of marriages that are non-Armenians. And he thinks it's only fair for them. But when our Catholicus had come in, he called me over to the head table. He's got to pull my leg, you know. And he says, by the way, he said, Catholicus just gave me permission that I could turn the whole service into English. I said, over my dead body. Just like that in English to him. And I turned to the Catholicus and I said, he's teasing you, isn't he? And he said, yeah. I said, he better be, because I said, if that whole thing is turned in English, you'll never see my face in church again.
So why is that so important to you?
Because it's an Armenian church. Now, the choir definitely will be Armenian. The whole, what is the word I'm looking for? Chant? No?
Chant. The songs.
The songs have to be Armenian. That's all there is to it.
The Bulgarian church, everything is done in English now. And not that we were exposed too much to the Bulgarian chants or the singing, but everything is a rush, rush, rush. And they sing the song so fast, a lot of times you don't understand it. Where ours is, I don't know if you've been to church or not, but it's all a different association. The chants are, it seems like they're pure, and they're not one when it's rushing. So that you can get it all over with. Although many of the people who come to church think that the services are too long anyway.
How long
are they? Hour
and a half. Well, more than that, really.
Starts at 10, he's usually through by 11:30, unless he has requiem services.
And then, but there's other things, that they're cutting out the solo.
Yeah. You mean the one that between Eddie and Melanie? No.
And there's certain ones like the Nicene Creed. If it's said in English, even though it's the same thing, word, it's different when it's said in Armenian. To me, because I'm American, but I'm of Armenian descent, it's different than having it just read in English. Like the Catholics, when they had all their
things in
Latin. The moment they went to the English version, you seemed like it lost something.
It did.
It didn't lose it. It's the same words, right?
I know, It became cold.
Only because they were exposed to they learned the Latin portion of it.
Well, the way I feel, honey, choir songs have to be sung in Armenian. That's all there is to it.
In 20 years or 30 years,
everything
all of it will be in English anyway.
Yeah.
Because the youngsters today are not pursuing the Armenian portion of it. So in order for them to understand anything, it's all got to be done in English.
So there's no Armenian school that is an offshoot of the church?
Well, there is, but it's like I say, it's a, it's sort of a pathetic thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have at the church anniversary. They had the Catholics here. They had the
Archbishop.
They had the prelate, and they had a little program. And they had a little program for the Armenian school portion of it. It was pathetic. The teacher got there, said four or five words, and the children repeated it. And it just got to the point where it wasn't anything presentable. My daughter teaches Armenian school to a certain portion of it. She has the singing and the dancing portion. When she takes the class over, when they learn something, they learn it completely. And when the children get there and they present their oral recitation, you're not ashamed of the product that's produced. But they had a woman by the name of Svetlana, they had my cousin Roxy, and they put on a program that was totally unacceptable. If it was that bad, you shouldn't have even presented it. Because our Catholic thinks the whole issue rises and sets with the children, because that's the future. But it was a pathetic performance.
Less to do with the children, more to do with the instructors?
No, more the instructor. Not that the children learn.
Yeah.
The same children learn because my daughter taught
Melanie
them.
Melanie teaches
yeah.
them, right?
And she's not an exceptional teacher. I mean, she just insists on them learning.
Matter of fact, I'll never forget when they got through, she got down on her knees and she applauded them. There were, what, three of them?
Yeah.
And a fourth girl come running up and hugged her, you know, Mary Porsigian's granddaughter.
Yeah.
And Melanie accepted her. She wasn't in her class, but because she saw what happened, she ran to Melanie. And Melanie said, "What was I going to do, Mom? Turn her away?" And the kids remembered that their teacher got down and applauded for them. That's how proud she was of them.
Right.
And that means a lot to the
kids. They don't forget that.
No.
Yeah. It's difficult. We have a lot of mixed marriages. We have Armenian males that are married to American-speaking women. We don't have too many where the Armenian, the male is a English-speaking, and the wife is Armenian. But everything hinges on the mother. The mother speaks Armenian, the child will speak Armenian. But because the child's with the mother all day long, if she speaks English to him, the father comes home after work, what little Armenian he speaks is not going to be registered with the child. But the mother speaks Armenian to the child from the day the child is born, then that child's going to learn Armenian. Because she's exposed to it. You can take a child that's born in China, if that child learns Chinese, that's the language she's going to be speaking, not English or Russian.
Right.
You know, I could never understand our son Arthur, like you said, has a wide vocabulary in the Armenian language. He didn't talk Armenian to his son, but he talked Armenian to his niece.
Does that make sense?
Does that make sense to you?
Well, I'm on the outside.
Yeah. And he used to come here and play with her and talk Armenian to her, and I'd sit there and look at him and I'd say, "I didn't hear you doing that to Andy."
Now all of a sudden Andy wants to learn Armenian.
Well, we try. We try. He'll pick it up.
He's
again.
A 13-year-old.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 13.
Right. But you know, you guys, language is important. I can hear that from what you're telling me. When I was talking to Father Barton, he was kind of comparing and contrasting the need for people to understand the message versus the desire to perpetuate the culture
mm-hmm.
through the hearers of the word as well. He leaned more towards the side of understanding instead of perpetuating tradition. I guess what I'm hearing from you, Ms. Azadorian, is that you want to stick with the Armenian because that's what's comfortable to you. Why not do both?
I do. I try. I really do try. there's something I can't do, and it's me, nobody else. Therefore, in English is Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
Well, we used to say it Dervormia. Now he's changed it to Lord have mercy. I'm sorry, I cannot. I've tried, I cannot. Say Lord have mercy. I'm so used to after 1955 until now saying Dervormia that all of a sudden now I'm to change and say Lord have mercy. Everybody in church says it but me. I just don't say anything.
You know, we have clergymen, real good friends of ours. One's Dergorian, who's the retired priest in Detroit, Michigan. And we had Father
Habesha,
who's pastor in Washington, D.C. To help them, they went to school and got educated to the point where they could speak better English. But both these gentlemen, as much as I love them and everything else, would try to impress upon you their knowledge of the English language. And they would use words that were out of this world. Yet the Catholicus or the Archbishop or the Prelate, when they come down here, they got a message they want to get across to you, and they want you to understand it. No fancy Armenian, no fancy big words or anything like that. But they spoke Armenian. And the Karakin,
God rest his soul.
Yeah, the first prelate that we had here, third. That later became the Catholicus of all Armenian churches, and he died. He'd speak in Armenian and English at the same time. But it'd be to the point where if he spoke Armenian and went into English, it just went in there where you wouldn't lose the train of thought.
Just as evil as you could get.
But yet they had Der Goyer and Der Habesha that they wanted to impress you upon Habesha. And they're talking to children in Sunday school. Now, if they want to impress me with big words, okay, because I can understand them, but the children couldn't.
There's a word for that. Iconoclastic, where you try to kind of inflate your
ego.
I guess your own ego, yeah.
But I'll tell you, this one that he was referring to was a rogue scholar. No.
Rhodes scholar?
Where did he go? He went to...
You mean Karakin?
Yeah.
He was in London. He was in...
That English... in
Oxford.
And he
was a Rhodes scholar.
He was walking through and comes across somebody and he asks him where the hall is, and the guy said he didn't know, and he said, I'm looking for the Armenian whatever. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. Well,
he said, what's an Armenian?
Oh yeah. And then he walks through this huge hall and there are two pictures. One end is an Armenian Catholicus and the other is a
English king.
Whatever. Okay? So now he's upset. He goes looking for this guy. And he finds him. And he grabs him by the ear and pulls him into the hall. He said, you want to know what an Armenian is? There are two pictures in this hall. One's a king and the other's an Armenian Catholicus. And you're asking me what an Armenian is? When he said that, these kids were about this high, roared with laughter. Now, when he was talking, and I am not lying, he was talking Armenian, next thing you know it's English, next thing you know it's Armenian, and like it said, you didn't lose the train of thought. Absolutely fabulous.
That was a gift. That was a gift he had.
Well, even that, Dervartan, the Bible is written in what they call the classical Armenian. They call it Karapar. The word that we and I speak, or Armenians in America speak, are what is called...
slang.
No, world renowned. But the Bible is written in the Karapar Armenian, and he reads this Karapar Armenian mentally. But what comes out of his mouth is what the ashra part of words.
Which are the everyday?
Yeah. That's quite a talent.
He's good. And he gives good sermons.
So what were your typical Sundays like back in the day in Lincoln Place?
Back in the day when the church first started out, there was a lot of people coming to church. Youngsters that had cameras would take films on Easter Sunday or on renowned holidays, and there'd be a whole flock of people coming out of that church. Today you go to church now, there's 30, 35 people. Maybe be hundreds coming out of our church back in those days.
Our Sunday started at, our church started at 10:30 then. And it would be over, say, by 12. And invariably would hang around, hoping and praying there'd be some luncheon or something, you know, so that we could all be together. And if there wasn't, then we'd just hang around for a while and chit-chat and make plans with our other couples to get together.
Well, they're provided, of course. It was winter time you didn't do it. The summertime was spring and fall. And the sun's out there real bright, and everybody's all dressed up real cute and everything else.
Right.
Quite a feeling, you know.
But now what we do, our church is over, say, no later than 11:45. That's really stretching it. And then we go to the hall for coffee and donuts and just hang around there for a while.
Hour.
And chit-chat with everybody and then come on home, you know. But
so they're still kind of connected through that. Through the church.
Oh yeah.
Always has been. Uh-huh. That's one thing Father Vartan really emphasized is he pounded on his, he said, wherever you see an Armenian, the first thing he does is open up a phone book and look for the Armenian church.
Correct.
He went into the history of the church.
We went into Las Vegas, my mom passed away in 66.
Yeah.
It was a lot of part of 66, we were in Las Vegas. And I had nothing to do, so I picked up the telephone book. We looked through it, and we could go up in.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy that played the oud. And I said, so now we ought to call this guy and talk to him, you know. No. They'll think you're looking for a free meal or this and that. So
we didn't call him.
We didn't call him. Anyway, he played, him and his little group, played in the, like a side portion of the...
The lounge.
Well, when we found out that he was playing there, we went to see him, and then after they had their intermission, we started talking to him. And I mentioned the fact that I looked up at the telephone directory and I was going to call him. Oh, you should have called him. He says, what was he?
Charles Osnabor.
Yeah, Charles Osnabor was one of his guests up there. He says, oh, you know, they had a good time. They had a bunch of people at the house. But then you keep yourself in the pants not calling him. But it was too late then.
He said we would have been.
Who's Charles Osnabor?
The French singer.
Oh, he's a French
Armenian singer.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, he's good.
He's world renowned. But he's got a following. He sings more classical songs than popular songs.
He writes it when he's out of love.
He's always in love and out of love. When he's out of love, he writes a lot of lyrics.
Sounds like a blues singer, too. He's just got the blues, maybe.
No,
we talked to him. We set a little interview with him. Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, you get older, and things change. You don't go out as much. And sometimes you become a stick in the mud. He's gotten to the point he really doesn't care to go anywhere anymore, but he's going out Saturday.
I got a big dance Saturday. I don't dance.
It's
the music's
right.
Real loud.
Yeah, November 17th.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right, I have a flyer on that.
Good, I hope you come.
I won't be there. Mm. I'm sorry. You don't go, you say you don't go out much. You also don't go out much when you have little children.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe
that's true.
Twice that happens in life.
Yeah. So. Unless, of course, you got a built-in babysitter, like a mother-in-law or a mother.
No. don't have that luxury.
Well, see, we lived 19 years with his mother, but she refused to watch the kids because they were there with her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So my mother watched them, and she was happy to. And then my mother-in-law would yell at me for taking my kids to my mother's. I said, well, make up your mind. She said, well, she's busy all day. She doesn't need them. I said, she enjoys them.
Well, what did the kids do? I mean, you're bringing up a good point. Nowadays, it seems like kids are dropped off at the daycare and whatnot. But I'm sure back in the day at Lincoln Place, there wasn't. That wasn't
going on. We were lucky.
On.
No, we were lucky. We had a community house.
What part of the church?
The Wall Center.
The what?
What was the name of that?
The community house, the clubhouse.
Yeah, I know. It's got a name now.
It has.
Yeah. It was, unless I'm mistaken.
I don't.
But anyway, it's the one on Niedring House.
Yes, right on the corner there, on Maple and Niedring House. And we spent our days there. And we had better be there or we would have gotten our lake switched by Miss Prather. I did one time. And she figured that club was for the kids of Lincoln Place and they had better be there. Their parents had enough to do. They didn't need to put up with the kids. So we were very lucky. We had that place to go to.
During a lot of services, they would read scriptures, scrolls. And when they give them out to us, we turn on and they would learn what was actually on the scrolls. And really, you memorize it, but you didn't know what you were memorizing. Well, one time, they gave them to my father-in-law and my mother-in-law. And my father asked my oldest son, he says, do you know what you're reading? And Eddie says, no. He's just memorizing it, and that's it, and he gets up there and reads the scroll. So my father-in-law then explained to him what the scroll meant. And this is the first time anybody explained to my oldest son what he was reading. And that way you learn. Or if you get something like this, you read it, you memorize it, and you don't know what you don't know what the word insurance means, you really haven't learned anything.
Yeah, kind of like the eunuch that was reading the scroll of Isaiah, and Philip was translated right next to this eunuch, and he says, do you understand what you're reading? He says, well, I can read it, but I don't understand. I don't have anybody to explain it to me. I understand.
But it was the first time anybody explained to him.
Right.
And, of course, 2/3 of the words that are in those scrolls, person with my education, wouldn't understand anyway.
The only thing is, we heard it so much. Now, my mother was an educated woman. She graduated from a high school in Istanbul, Turkey, equivalent to 2 years of college here. And she spoke beautiful Armenian, as did his mother, okay? And I picked up my mother's Armenian, not my father's, because my father was only a fourth grader. And he finished self-teaching himself by reading good books and everything in Armenian. And my daughter to this very day always says, Mom, she said, when you talk Armenian, she says, it's beautiful. I said, thanks to Grandma Camberian. Because of her education, we were able to learn her Armenian. And there are words that I hear today that I heard many years ago. I don't use it, but I know what it means. And I say, oh my God, I haven't heard that word in years, you know? And then it falls into place. But who am I gonna speak it to? My kids? Okay, so I talk Armenian to them, I do. But I don't talk that big Armenian to them.
These, her cousins that we went to visit in 97, since the earthquake, I think in 88, we found out that they were lacking financial assistance, so on and so forth. And although we didn't know how to get the money to them, we would find people who were going to Armenia and we give them whatever money we could afford at the time, that they would get it.
You support them now, honey.
Well, I know, but one of the things that we did when we were there, we set up an account for them at the
Midland
Bank. And so I send the money 3 times a year from my credit union to the Marine Midland Bank in New York, which is ultimately transferred to the account in Midland Bank in Yerevan. And the cousins use that money for whatever purpose they can. But this has really got to...
Well, if it wasn't for you, honey, their condition would be.
Well, that wasn't what I was trying to get across. I was trying to get a point across, but it slipped my mind.
Did it have anything to do with the earthquake?
Well, that's when it started, the earthquake.
Right.
But we didn't send very much money at the outset because we didn't have ways to get the money to them.
Right.
It's only if a clergyman was going from America to Yerevan,
right,
to Etchmiadzin for visit, that we would send money, and they would gladly take it up there.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, at one of the big clergy meetings, the Archbishop, because they were going to vote for a new archbishop, and he had to leave the meeting, so he goes to the Ladies Guild meeting. And while there, he tells the story of this couple from Granite City who's supporting 2 families in Armenia and Yerevan. And one of the women was dying because she wanted to know who it was. She never did find out, but I haven't denied it. I do announce it, that my husband takes care of my family. And if it wasn't for Ed, I don't know what their condition would be today. And every time we call to let them know that the money is there, if we get prayed...
Oh, that's what I was going to get to.
Okay.
Whenever we call, the one they want to talk to is, of course, their cousin, which is Mary. And in the course of the conversation, she speaks better Armenian than anybody else. So she doesn't want to talk to him because when she talks to her cousin Hagu, tells him something, then all of a sudden his wife Asya gets on the phone. She asks the same question that Hagop did. Like, Hagop's not going to tell his wife, well, this is the conversation I had with my cousin, you know.
So I repeat. If I talk to 5 of them, I repeat everything, you know. And really, they would rather talk to Melanie than anybody else. That's how much they love her. Well, we call at 5, 6 in the morning, you know. Well, Melanie's not going to be here.
No, we call normally 12 noon.
Midnight.
12 noon or 12 midnight.
Yeah, that's it.
Which
you're
is around
right.
9
you're
o'clock
correct.
Their time. 9 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock at night.
Matter of fact, don't we own a phone call? Because the last 2 calls were not clear.
Yeah.
We couldn't get through real good. I don't know why, what happened. But I haven't called 6 weeks.
I have trouble getting across to your cousins. You sit there, you're tolerant.
You have trouble talking to your aunt in California, honey.
Well, no, that's, I see that, and not to heap praise on you, because I know that's not what you're going after, but I see that as, I see anything good that we are as being a direct result of God pouring his love through us, and that love then in turn flows out.
Yes.
And it does. It changes,
I believe it.
It changes people's lives.
I believe it.
And that's kind of what the sense that I'm getting is that's the testimony that you have. You know, is that maybe you didn't see the church providing in a way that you would have liked to have seen it, been able to provide for in the past. But here in your personal life,
he's doing it.
The church is providing. Because the church is not the building, the church is the people in the building. So I see that as kind of a fulfillment of what you were saying earlier, that your heart's desire was to serve.
Once you see the conditions in which they live in,
right,
it just they just got to be helped. Is what it all,
right.
Yeah, you just wish you could do more.
That's the best way you can do it.
Yeah.
Right.
I always say, though, if there's a place up there, that's for it. Really. I mean, I've been sick for 6 weeks. Guess who's been doing the work?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, our husbands and wives are our true blessings.
Yeah.
Listen, you guys, I don't want to keep you any longer than you want to be kept, but I wanted to ask you, is there anything, because I'm not a professional interviewer, but is there anything that you want to talk about that we haven't covered, something that you feel is very important to yourselves, or to yourself, Mr. Asadorn? Something that you would like to, even envisioning in your mind, somebody picking this up 50 years from now, saying, oh, I wonder what life was like in Lincoln Place. What would you tell that person?
Well, it has its ups and downs, but that's life. I mean, everybody has problems in the room.
Oh, honey, in Lincoln Place, you had that unity.
Oh, yeah, unity.
You had the unity, you had the love, everybody was your mother and father. Really?
That's one thing lacking today. When our kids were growing up, if my oldest son did something wrong, we had about five or six mothers who would turn and say, Eddie, quit doing that. Today, you'll be careful because maybe Charlie's mother just wants you to holler at her kid. You
right.
Know?
Or Charlie will call the cops on you.
That'll be the day.
But during our time, everybody hollered at the kid, you know. If they did something wrong, they just pounced on them, you know. I mean, they didn't do it to be critical. I mean,